This is a Voyascape podcast. You can find all of our travel podcasts from around the world at voyascape.com.
Today's episode is a game changer for families who want to adventure more. If you think having young kids means putting your travel dreams on hold, I promise you, this episode will completely change the way you think. Meet Shannon and Tyson of Restless Crusade, who have taken their 5-year-old twins on epic adventures, such as trekking to Everest Base Camp, Bali, El Salvador, and beyond. They're here to rewrite the rules on family travel and show you how to make incredible journeys with young kids not only possible, but unforgettable. Let's dive in and get inspired by their amazing stories and tips.
Imagine pursuing your dreams of exploring the world's most exquisite destinations without the extravagant price tag. This is the Revolutionizing Your Journey podcast, hosted by DeAndre Koch, founder of Boldly Go and an expert in financial planning as recognized by Forbes. This podcast is your bridge to a world where travel savvy meets luxury. With DeAndre's unique financial planning perspective, you'll glean insights on making the most of credit card loyalty points and miles for travel that doesn't just move you, but takes you places that you may have never thought possible. Expect the most up-to-date credit card strategies for points and miles, stories from successful professionals on how they integrate travel into their busy lives, and other captivating stories from around the globe. Whether you're a seasoned traveler or just starting out, join us in exploring the best of global travel and learn how to experience nearly free luxury travel around the world yourself. Your journey transforms here, igniting our revolution in the world of travel.
Welcome, everybody, to the Revolutionizing Your Journey podcast. I am your host, DeAndre Koch, and I have an exciting one for you today. If you have been in the camp of, oh, we have young children, we can't really do much and travel much yet, we gotta wait till they get older, I'm telling you, this couple will completely rewrite the way that you think. I'm gonna introduce you to Shannon and Tyson of at Restless Crusade, and they really caught my attention because they have two young children. I say young, I mean very young children. And they hit Everest Base Camp, Nepal, Bali, El Salvador, Guatemala. I'm seeing these small kids scrambling over boulders and rocks. And I'm like, how are they doing that? I need to hear their story. I need you all to hear their story. And we're going to get all into it. So Shannon, Tyson, welcome, welcome, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks for having us on.
Absolutely. So I'm going to just start with the first question here. How young are your children?
They are 5 currently.
They are 5 years old. Okay. And I know it was last year, right, when you guys hit Everest Base Camp. I think your post on that, which is pinned to your profile, I know. So for listeners, you got to go check out their profile to see this. That was a year ago. So you're telling me you guys went to Everest Base Camp with 4-year-olds?
Yep, we sure did. And it was kind of on a whim.
Yeah, it was March last year. You headed over there. So.
Yeah, it was something that we really didn't even know we were going to be doing Nepal at the time. We started out with, we were going to be living on a sailboat for 6 months. And starting out of Australia, heading towards Africa and up to the Med. But we were on the sailboat, which needed a lot of work to get fixed. And we ended up bailing on that about 6 weeks into it, and then tried to figure out what we were going to do. So we went to Bali for a month, Thailand for a month, and then we decided, let's just go to Nepal. We like to hike. Let's go check it out. So that's kind of how we ended up doing Everest Base Camp with our kids.
So you got to Nepal and you're like, well, we're in Nepal. I mean, we've got to go see Everest, right? Is that basically, was that the transition?
That was basically it. We landed at the Kathmandu airport, got a hotel for 3 nights, got everything figured out, and flew to Lukla 4 days after arriving into Nepal and started our hike.
That's incredible. So, and you have, it's twin girls, correct?
That's correct.
Got it. So that is super exciting. So where are you guys from? We'd love to get some background. Where are you from? Where do you live? Do you roam around the world and just live in different places around the world? Do you have a base of where you start from and just kind of do these trips here and there? So love to get some background on where you guys are in the world right now, where you're from, and kind of how do you decide where you're going to go?
We live in the North Okanagan in BC, Canada. We live in a pretty nice place with lakes and mountains surrounding us. We love to hike and backpack and camp. So you mostly find us in the mountains hiking. And that is one of the reasons why we could do Everspace Camp on a whim, is because our kids have been hiking since they could walk. So it wasn't something we just decided to do out of the blue, not being hiked.
Just, you guys didn't just ever hike. You had hiked before. Okay.
Yes.
Got it.
Absolutely. We live in the Okanagan for 8 months of the year. And then for about 4 months, we travel. So the winter months, we kind of travel. And we just kind of pick wherever. It's usually kind of a last minute, within 6 weeks, book some flights and go somewhere.
So how did you guys both get started in traveling and hiking? Was that something that, you know, kind of you two were passionate about? Did you meet? Was a first date on the mountain somewhere? Like how did that all start? Because obviously you just didn't have kids and say, you know what, this is a good time to pick up hiking. So how did you guys get started in the traveling and hiking and backpacking world that you're in now?
That's you.
I grew up kind of hiking with my family. We spent, you know, summers going through various parts of British Columbia, you know, through the Kootenays and the mountains. So I was used to hiking lots and not too much overnighting in tents. Not until I was, you know, out of high school and stuff like that, when I started doing more overnight stuff. But, and then traveling, when I was 19, I left home and just started wandering around. Me and a group of friends went to Southeast Asia for 8 months, and then I come home and work for 4 months and then take off for another 4 months and, you know, just try to pick a new country and see where I could end up and see what we can do. And a lot of times it predominated around hiking as well. Like I was in Nepal when I was 20, and then I was down through Central America and South America, like the Machu Picchu stuff in Peru, different mountains in Bolivia. And just, it's just always something I've always been doing my whole life. So it wasn't that big of a transition for me anyways.
And then when we met, we started doing a lot of hiking, a lot of backpacking. We're in the mountains as often as we could. And then when we decided to have kids, we didn't want to change our lifestyle. So we just adapted and they came with us everywhere we went.
Very nice. How long have you guys been together now?
12 years.
12, yeah. 12 years, yeah. I guess. Married for 5.
Got it. So together 12 years, married for 5. Do you guys have a tally of kind of how many different countries you guys have been to together? Do you keep a record of that? Or is there something that you kind of keep out in the bucket list of always trying to get to this next country?
He kind of wants to go to every country in the alphabet.
I'd like to go to every country, like an A country or B country, and fill that list. But We don't really keep a track of them. We could list them off by all means. I don't know the number. We were counting a little while ago. And I think the girls have been to about 15 or 16, maybe 17 countries now. So we'll be a couple more countries higher than that. But yeah, as a couple, right?
Yeah, we first started taking the girls' first international trip, not to the U.S., but international, further away. They were 7 months old. We went to Egypt, Jordan, and Israel with them and kind of backpacked our way through there for a few months.
Wow. Wow. So what would you say to the parents that hear that and they're like, oh my gosh, there's no way that I could do that? I mean, also for the record, I mean, you're backpacking, so you're literally carrying a very heavy backpack, but then you're also carrying a human that can't walk. And there's two of them, so you can't even really say, oh, I'm tired, let me pass one to the other, because there's one for each of you. How in the world do you guys do this? I also get at the same time, hey, you're very well-traveled hikers and backpackers, but I feel like you just added a bunch of extra weight You have to figure that out strategically, right? So for the parent that hears this is like, oh my gosh, there's no way. What would you say to them?
Well, a lot of the time I find you're only really carrying your bag from wherever you're staying to the taxi or the bus depot. So you're not really lugging around all that much. But when the girls are small, yeah, it's a bit of a pain. We're dealing with formula. We're dealing with diapers and things like that. And it was definitely a little more challenging. We actually rented a car when we were in Israel. So that was a bit more easy. And when they're really little, like when we first got to the Middle East, they couldn't even walk yet, or crawl even. So we just put them on the bed and they wouldn't fall off or anything. You just leave them there, like putting a rock in the middle of the road, right?
But well, you really don't need much for little kids. They don't need anything. And when you're walking around and seeing all these different places and things, they're just observing. So it's not like you need to bring toys or have baby swings or... I know, and for us, we never brought a stroller or anything because we just carried them. They were always on us in a carrier, which is safer as well because they're on you.
And a lot of the places we stayed at, they were help us out quite a bit with things. They'd ask us if we wanted more blankets or if we needed a crib for them or something like that. And it wasn't an extra charge or anything. It was just how the hospitality worked over there. So there were some places where we had a small bed. So just Shannon and I would be in them, and the girls would, we get a couple extra covers and we put them in the corner of the room and they just sleep on the floor. You know, they're only 8 months old. They don't know any different, and they're comfy and warm and cozy. And we were in climates that countries that the climate was quite compatible, right? So we're not bringing a whole bunch of warm weather clothes. We're just basically a bunch of bathing suits and some shorts and t-shirts not necessarily through the Middle East because the girls had to be covered up a bit more. So Shannon had to have longer pants and stuff like that. But we're not bringing, huge sweaters and jumpers and pants to take up a lot of space. But it's one of those things too. If it's something you want to do, you'll find a way to do it. If it's not important to you, you'll just make excuses. So
no, that's completely true. I absolutely understand that. So at this age where they are now, so both the girls are 5 years old, what goes into planning a trip with them destination-wise? Because now they are a lot more mobile and, a lot of kids nowadays, they do want to have something grabbing their attention, right? So what goes into your planning now when it comes to getting them ready for a trip, getting yourselves ready, getting the whole family, and then picking where you guys go?
Well, I think our children are very easygoing, and because they're twins, they're best friends, they can entertain each other with nothing. So wherever we go, they can just find sticks, rocks, on the beach, whatever. We don't really even need to bring much in terms of entertainment, like toys or anything like that for them.
We'll bring books and stuff to read and a couple of familiarities. They'll bring a blanket and maybe a stuffed animal, but we have a little backpack for them that they carry every now and then, and they're allowed to fill it with whatever they want. So they put their own personal items that they feel like bringing, and we just find a way to make it work. But usually we end up gaining more things, right? They'll collect rocks on the beach somewhere and they'll want us to bring that. And it's just the last thing I need is to carry rocks around, but I guess I'll do that.
But as far as picking countries to take our kids to, we do the normal, Google searches on, is the country safe? What kind of, risk level the country's at, what kind of immunizations our kids need.
And what sort of activities we can get into, because we want something for Shannon and myself, but we also want something for the girls. So we try to incorporate beaches and places to swim and things like that. Just kind of, not necessarily free activities, but stuff where you can just spend the day spend the day at the beach and just enjoy and relax and for the slow days, because you can't keep moving every single day because they just get worn out. So,
but hiking, everyone just wants to hike. Like any time we are booking a trip now, it needs to be based around hiking, because the consensus after Nepal was, where do you want to go next? It's always Nepal. So we need to find some more mountains to hike next.
And we've never really raised our kids with things being the entertainment, right? Like we try to spark their imagination. So we'll go to the park or in the backyard. We won't, we don't really give them an iPad or a TV or anything like that. That's not our traditional way of going. So it's not like when we go on holidays, they're, leaving anything behind so much. It's like, oh, we're going to be gone for 3 months or 4 months now and you're never going to see a computer. They're not missing that because they don't sit in front of the TV all day long. So
Got it. Okay, perfect. So it sounds like you guys have a you know, your kids are fairly easy to work with. They want to go hiking, so you're finding the hiking trips. So when it comes to travels in general, is it now 100% of your trips is the whole family, or do you ever get to go off yourselves and do maybe some of the more challenging hikes or challenging destinations or challenging countries?
Yes, there's definitely a few trips that we have done without the kids because they can't come with us. I mean, we would love to bring them with us. They're too young. So yes, we do. We climbed Aconcagua in 2022.
I think it was, yeah. It's the tallest peak in South America, sorry, down there. And it's just, you know, you're on glaciers with crampons and ropes, and the altitude's way too high. You just can't have little kids up there.
And then we've done some stuff in Washington. We've done Mount Baker and Mount Rainier. We have a really, really good family network. So we are able to leave the girls with the grandparents for us to be able to do this kind of stuff, the two of us.
Those are more shorter trips. And the Aconcagua one in Argentina, that was 3 weeks or 4 weeks. That was a bit longer. But for us to whip down to go climb Mount Rainier, that's, you know, a long 4 days kind of thing. So it's not the end of the world us taking off like that. And even when we're on trips too, we somewhat break off too. Like, we both enjoy scuba diving, so we'll try to incorporate that on some of our holidays when the girls are with us. However, we can't go at the same time because the girls need a place to go. So we'll split it up, right? I'll go one day and then Shannon will go the next day, and it just takes a bit longer. And we sort of incorporate some adult-based activities onto our family holidays as well that way.
Very cool. I'm sure it's going to be exciting when they can start diving with you. My fiance and I, we're both divers as well. And so we've been in a few dive trips where, you know, kids are basically there where they just got certified, right? So they're excited to be able to go down. And so with their parents, I feel like their parents have been diving for years and they always are kind of snorkeling on the boat or whatever it may be. So I know there's like the evolution of, well, first, you know, they're not on the boat with you, then they're on the boat snorkeling, then eventually they can be diving with you. So I'm sure that's going to be an exciting moment for the family.
Well, yeah, when they were 7 months old and we were in Egypt, we were diving and they did come on the dive boat with us. We still alternated, but they were on the dive boat with us. And then just like, we now just gauge, can they snorkel with us? Because now they can snorkel. But is it a place they can snorkel while one of us is diving? Or do we just leave them back and one of us just goes alternating?
Yeah. We like to get involved as much as we can. Like, if we can have them on the boat with us and, you know, the reef is close to the surface, you know, then bring them along. Why not? But, you know, if the reef is 18 meters down and they're not going to really see anything from snorkeling on the boat, then it's, or the boat's not covered properly and it's just full sun and exposed, it's like, well, we probably should leave them at home so they don't just get fried in the sun there.
Yeah, that makes complete sense. So I want to transition you guys and chat a little bit about destinations, right? So I want to start with Everest, but then I want to come back and also ask about other just really memorable places that you guys have been, have traveled to, whether just yourself or with the entire family. I mean, again, on your social media, I mean, you got beautiful videos of waterfalls and the girls in all over the world, really. But would want to start with Everest. I know you said that was kind of a little bit on a whim, that you guys are trained backpackers and hikers, skilled. I mean, you're talking summiting some of the highest peaks in the world, or mountains in the world, I should say. So when it came to there, how was that experience overall? I mean, was it all just, hey, it all worked out perfectly, or now we made it to the base camp and we were like, all right, it's time to go back. Okay, what was that actual story of starting the trek and getting to the destination?
Well, we started the trek and Tyson had kind of researched it ahead of time and broken it all down in how we were going to do it, because like, there's an adult pace that you can go, but we wanted to make sure our kids were fully acclimatized to be able to get to Everest Base Camp. And kids, I don't know, after seeing our kids and how the altitude didn't really affect them, I'm not sure if it had to do with because we acclimatized so well, because we built in extra days into our trek or what. But I mean, with the extra days we built into our trek, It just made it so much more amazing because we had so much more time to enjoy the views and the mountains around us, and no pressure on hiking. Our hiking days, some of them were only a few hours. I mean, a few days we did push a little bit longer, but for the most part, like we all just all enjoyed it all. Like there was never any, I don't want to do this, I don't want to go on, except for the day we hiked to Everest Base Camp. It had snowed the night before, and it was pretty deep. And our kids have, they're pretty small, and their little hiking boots, the snow was over top of their hiking boots. So we weren't sure we were going to be able to do it. But Tyson went out and assessed it, and he said, well, it's pretty packed down. I think we can hike the trail. But it's already 11:30 in the morning, so we were going a little bit late. But we thought, okay, well, let's give it a go. So of course, we start going. About an hour into it, it just starts blowing so hard, started snowing so hard. The conditions just were not ideal, like the rest of the days we took hiking up there. And then our girls started complaining that their feet were cold. Of course, their tiny little feet there. And so we were only, what, 100 meters from,
Yeah, maybe a little bit further,
maybe
but
200 meters from base camp. And we just picked them up and made our way because we're like, we are not turning around. No, now it's only 200 meters. So we got there, we pulled their boots off. We put little, those hot pockets, those hand warmers, put them on their feet. And we had brought wool, fleece lined wool socks for them, or slippers. So we put those on them and got them all nice and warm there. Then they were happy again. But it was.
Yeah, we basically just broke it down like the traditional, like if you search on the internet right now for a guided base camp track, it'll take you what, set 13 days, I think it is, to get up and back. So, and like I said, I was there before, so I knew what the trail was like. So we looked into it a bit, and we weren't really comfortable with joining a guided group just for the simple reason of what if we got to slow down and there's other people there, right? You can't really just leave the group like that. And then we knew we weren't going to be able to keep an adult pace. So, and we're on family holiday at the end of the day. Like, and it's basically catered towards the girls. As soon as they felt uncomfortable, didn't want to go, we were either going to stop and take some more rest days or turn around and go back down. Like the base camp was the goal, but that wasn't, that it wasn't a necessity, right? We weren't going to risk our kids at that stage. So we ended up breaking it down, and we never really crossed. Once we were above about 3,500 meters elevation, we didn't really hike any more than about 300 meters vertical gain in a day. We were doing half days compared to the adult schedule, and I think the biggest day might have been 6 kilometers after that, but most of the days were only 3 kilometers. So, that's it's not really that far. And so we had lots of time just to sort of casually go around, look at the mountains, and keep the kids entertained and distracted that way. So it worked out really well. And we get to the lodges by lunchtime, and we, order hot chocolate and whatever else, and just relax and enjoy and wander the town. And yeah, it worked out perfect, really. And at the end of the day, no one had any issues. No one felt uncomfortable. We weren't really even hiking along enough to have blisters. So.
And I think that is the thing. Like, we wanted to reach Everest Base Camp, but it wasn't like imperative. Like, if anything happened to any of us, like, if any one of us got any symptoms related to altitude sickness or food issues or anything like that, or if the kids said, I don't want to hike anymore. I mean, obviously, we're going to say, are you sure? Like, we push them a little bit. But if we had like a serious like pushback on the hiking, we would have turned around.
Hey, it's DeAndre here, and we're going to interrupt this episode real quick to tell you about two great opportunities for all of you. First, join our private Facebook community to connect with fellow points and miles enthusiasts, get exclusive tips and updates, as well as get your questions answered directly by me and others in the community. And if you're looking to level up your points and miles skills, we've partnered with Lux Travel Hacks to offer you 50% off their online course that will teach you all the basics you need to know to learn how to travel in business or first class, all for less than you'd pay for economy. Don't forget to use the code BOLDLYGO at checkout. You'll find all the details and links to both of these in the show notes. Now, let's get back to our episode. That makes a lot of sense. And actually, so I've never Google searched or looked up like getting to Everest Base Camp. I've actually, in the back of my mind, had always had an interest in doing that. I'm not a huge hiker by any means, and I've got really bad knees. And so I'm not destined for hiking. Scuba diving and other athletic sports, really good at, but for whatever reason, hiking after a while, it's painful. But my question, or not question, what I was going to say is, if you had asked me, how long do you think it takes to get, to start the trek to get to Everest Base Camp, I would have said, 3 to 4 days, almost like a Machu Picchu type thing. No idea that, like you said, hey, like to get there and back was about a 13-day trek. Wow, that's a lot more than I was expecting it to be. And the follow-up was, you said there's like lodges and stuff. So, and as you're explaining the story, in my head, I'm thinking like every day, like you're resetting up camp for yourself along this trek. But it sounds like you actually have places you can stop and like sleep in a bed and everything. This is all foreign to me completely, as you can probably tell.
And well, when we say lodges, yes, I mean, it's amazing because yes, you don't have to set up a tent. You don't have to cook for yourself, anything like that. These lodges, they're very inexpensive to stay at. But in order for them to be that inexpensive to stay at, you do need to eat there, because that's how they make their money, is by paying for the meals, which.
It's not even really that expensive.
It's not even that expensive. And where you sleep, though, is not heated. So there were some mornings we would wake up to ice on the windows. And so we brought like minus 30 Celsius sleeping bags to sleep in, to make sure we were all warm enough. The main part that you eat and the main lodge that you would hang out in, they do have a fire burning stove. I want to say word burning, but it's not. It's after 4,000 meters, it's yak poo burning stove.
Got it.
So that is where you stay warm, and then you're nice and warm, and then you go to bed and sleep in these.
But yeah, you're not really bringing our backpacks. They were larger than, if it was just Shannon and myself, because we had the girl stuff as well. But, we're not bringing majority of the things we do if we go in the bush here. So, you just kind of bring in your sleeping bag and some clothes and your toiletries. And if you want to bring a book, you bring a book, and away you go. So your packs are quite light. And there's tea houses everywhere.
Like every few kilometers. And we didn't even really bring snacks. No. Because you can get everything there. And our kids do eat a variety of different foods. They're not picky eaters. So that works in our benefit. But you can get anything there. You can get pizza. You can get pasta. You can, it's not...
Yeah, you're not living on rations or anything. There's a main town called Namche Bazaar, which is like the hub of the Khumbu region for the Everest stuff. And I think it's twice a week, all the main market area just fills up with tents and stalls, and all these surrounding villages bring in goods to sell, basically. And it's not necessarily for the tourists, it's more for the locals. So the restaurant owners and the tea house owners up the hill more, they come down and they're buying, fresh potatoes, fresh tomatoes, all kinds of like fruits and vegetables that the neighboring communities grow and then they sell in the market. So you'll be up at 5,000 meters above sea level and you'll have fresh vegetables. Like it's really quite a strange concept in there. So you're not just eating, like freeze-dried astronaut food or anything that you think you're eating. So it's definitely nice. More luxurious than you'd expect, right?
Mm-hmm. Very, very nice.
Yeah, so we didn't really have any complications, nobody got sick, Nepal is actually the only country in all of our travels that none of us have gotten sick. And by sick, I mean like food sickness or like any type of sickness. It's the only country in the world, honestly, that we've traveled to that nobody got sick.
So before we wrap up here, outside of Everest, what has been one of the most memorable or other memorable trips that you guys have taken as a family? We would love, because I think there's a lot of the listeners would be like, yeah, I'm never going to Everest. But any other destinations that you guys have been to that have just been absolutely stunning, that you think, whether you hike or not, it would be an amazing place for people to just see that might fly under the radar?
Well, I think Everest, not to bring it back to Nepal, but Nepal sort of flies under the radar because it's pretty amazing country. Like, there's lots of hikes that you can do that are only 4 days long, 5 days long. You don't have to do a big trek. Like this one, the adult version was 13 days and we did it in 17 days, which is a long, it's a lot of hiking, right? It's 65 kilometers one way. So, but you can do shorter versions as well. And there's also a low lying area near like northern India. And we were down there and it was 33 degrees and we're on like a jungle safari, basically looking for rhinoceroses and stuff like that. Yeah. Like there's a lot of Nepal that nobody even really understands. But
like, did you know you could do a safari in Nepal?
Never heard of that. Never guessed you could see rhinoceros in Nepal. Yeah. Would not have been on my bingo card.
Yeah. But I think El Salvador was a good one for us as well.
I think that one really wowed us. It was very inexpensive. It's very, very safe. The locals absolutely love you. Like it is. Yeah.
And El Salvador got such a bad reputation over the last years, and understandably why the drug violence and stuff like that kind of took over the country, same with some of the neighboring there as well. But the amount of volcanoes and waterfalls and just the
ocean.
Yeah, the ocean. Like it's a tiny little place. Like,
it has everything going for it.
We're based in one town and we just do day trips to see something new every day. So we go for a waterfall hike and we, you know, take this path and it was seven waterfalls in a row and, you know, pretty amazing. You went out to the ocean and there's black sand volcanic beach and the waves coming in and, you know, and then we climbed a volcano there and it just this turquoise teal emerald blue lake in the bottom of the volcano that you look down into. Like it's really, I think it's overlooked by most people. Mm-hmm. And it's quite close to the States in Canada, right? You could fly down there in a few hours.
Yeah, I think they have a lot of direct flights from the States now into San Salvador. But honestly, like most people think of El Salvador and they think dangerous and can't go there. And it's honestly such an amazing country.
We didn't have any issues. We had people in, like some of the locals when we were in Panama City, they were telling us to, you know, like make sure we were holding on to our kids tight and keep them in front of us and you shouldn't be walking around. But over there, everyone is so excited to see everybody. And it was, like I say, zero troubles at all.
Right.
And there's something for everyone in El Salvador.
And it's so close to everything, right? Like you go to places like Guatemala and it's really nice there, but you'll be on a bus ride for 12 hours or 14 hours sometimes. And down there, a lot of the buses are just our old school buses, the yellow bluebirds, right? And so you're hopping in there and it's 35 degrees Celsius and the humidity's up through the roof and you're just sweating away. But in El Salvador, you ride the bus for an hour and you see something completely different and you're not just drained by the travel.
That's awesome. So what do you guys have on the docket this year, right? Any future trips that you guys have really lined up that you figured out or are still on the planning stage? Where are we going to see you headed to next?
Well, for the summer, we're just going to be around here, probably BC, Alberta, doing a lot of hikes in the mountains. And then, I don't know, we're still talking it over, deciding where we're going to go maybe just after Christmas for 3-4 months. We've got a few things we're kind of tossing around.
Yeah, we don't quite know what my work schedule is going to be like and how much time off I can gain over the winter there. And we'd like to be home for Christmas and with the grandparents. We've actually missed the last two, so we like to, for the girls' sake as well as the grandparents and cousins' sake of the girls, just for they can enjoy Christmas a little more traditional than, you know, how we've had it the last couple of years. So, but yeah, we're tossing around some ideas of thinking maybe back to Asia, but Africa's kind of on the table, but we don't know. We're gonna jockey around prices of things and value of it, right? Price is one thing, but if we don't see the value in it, you know, even if it's dirt cheap, we're not going to go. We can't get what we want out of it.
Well, and Africa, we also, kids will need yellow fever vaccine and malaria pills. So we kind of have to weigh out that sort of thing as well as, you know, the risks and the...
We're going to do some more preliminary research on where we want to go and the reason why we're going there, right? If we're going there to go to a Serengeti safari, like, is it going to be the rainy season? Is it going to... Are there issues we're going to have? Is it like we're going to see something or is it... Is the safari kind of not quite worth it? And you really should go down to, you know, Kenya or Tanzania or South Africa.
And I mean, I still want to do South America as well. Like, even Peru, Patagonia, all that sort of stuff. So it's just, there's so much out there to do and see and do. We got to just make a decision and figure it out. It usually all boils down to how much is the airfare.
Yeah, because four people flying around the world gets expensive.
Yeah,
it does.
And that's usually helps make the decision.
Yeah. And unfortunately, Nepal is sort of the direct opposite side of the world from us here. It's a long ways away. Yeah. So it makes it very expensive to get over there. So
I know in our podcast, we feature a lot of conversation of traveling with points and miles, which is a lot harder to do when you're Canadian than when you're in the US with the cards that we have access to versus what you guys have access to.
Absolutely, we do not have good point system at all.
No, it's really difficult. I had a follower that reached out that was Canadian and said, hey, like, what do you recommend? And I like did a huge deep dive, and I basically came down to like, I think you can do this card for like Air Canada or basically was like the option. Super difficult.
Absolutely.
Awesome, guys. Well, this has been phenomenal. Absolutely love what you guys have accomplished with kids that are so young, and your desire to just keep life moving forward and really having the kids adapt to your lifestyle. And so I'd love to ask, as we wrap up here, what would be advice that you would give for young parents who just want to who are newbie travelers in general, right? So maybe they're not even the experienced traveler, and they're taking a pause or think they need to pause because they have kids, but maybe they're just a new parents and maybe newbie travelers. They might not be ready to do a 13-day trek to Everest base camp, but what would you recommend that they start with?
Start with what? I think you definitely have to know yourself and know your children and what you and your children are capable of doing, tolerance levels of things, but I've always said Asia is usually one of the best bets. Like, you go to Thailand area and it's good quality, it's affordable. You know, you can't really beat it. Some of Central America, it gets a bit rougher. You know, the travel's a bit more challenging. It's hotter, it's sweatier. There's a bit more scams on the go. You know, you got to sort of be on your wits a bit more. But Southeast Asia, it's usually, that's kind of my go-to for people that are getting into traveling. Like, the food's great. The beaches are amazing. You know, the transportation, the buses and stuff like that, they're dependable, they have air conditioning, and you're not, you know, you have to worry quite so much. But
and I think that you need to maybe just
try it,
just go.
Yeah,
just do it.
Yeah,
especially with kids, like babies, they have diapers, they have everything in every country,
and kids don't really know, they don't know what their limits are yet, right? And so for us, we don't want to tell us our girls that they can't do something, because we don't know if they can't do it. We're going to at least let them try. So, you know, they can put up with different temperatures. They can put up with long bus rides because we've tried it and they didn't complain or things like that. But I understand some people's kids, they're a little more colicky, or, you know, they might depend more on electronics and things like that. But
you can bring an iPad with you.
But yeah, if you have a bus ride in Thailand, you can bring an iPad. It's not the end of the world. And like I said earlier, like if it's important to you, you'll do it. And if it's not important to you, you'll make an excuse. And so you just got to figure out what your priorities are, what you can afford. And I think one of the hardest parts also that gets overlooked is with my work schedule, I'm able to take a large chunk of time off. So if someone only really has 2 weeks off, it's a bit more challenging, because, you know, when we get sick, sometimes we'll stay in a place for 4 days or 5 days and we only wanted to be there for two, right? So you have to be flexible with your schedule. So it is a bit more challenging. I understand that. If, like I say, if you only have 2 weeks for a vacation and you want to go to these four spots, you know, if something bad happens and someone can eat some food or something that's not good, that could ruin your entire trip because you're stuck in one hotel and things. But
you need to be flexible. With kids, you need to be flexible. You can't just be like, okay, I'm on this 2 week vacation, we're going to do all these things. You need to have rest days in there. Because you can't just go with kids. They need downtime as well.
We traditionally spend about a month a country, which is a long time for the average person, right? Not many people can get a month off at a time, and I understand that. But, you know, it gives us freedom to go to half a dozen different places, and it works out to, you know, 5 days per place, and it works out well.
Awesome. And Tyson, what is it that you do for work?
I'm in the electrical industry, so I work on high voltage powered systems and stuff like that. So any of the transformers and anything basically you'd find in a substation, I'll work in there. We do maintenance commissioning, testing, things like that. And a lot of our testing in particular doesn't traditionally work in the cold weather. So once it gets cold, the job's really thinned down. So I'm able to take a lot of time off. It's just, yeah, the accuracy of the testing doesn't work very well. So we, you know, the job's thinned down and there's other guys in the crew that want to work. So I just say, yeah, you guys can take those jobs and we'll go on a holiday. So it works out quite well. And we plan for it, right? We save money during the summer. We try to save money because we're expecting to have a slow time in the winter. So,
Got it. And Shannon, do you work outside the home yourself as well?
I don't. I run the house and wrangle the kids.
Hey, that's a very demanding job, very busy job.
Yeah.
Well, awesome, guys. Two last questions for you. The first one is, where can the listeners find you?
They can find us on Instagram at Restless Crusade. We also have a blog, which is restlesscrusade.com. Mm-hmm. YouTube as well.
I think most social media platforms are just Restless Crusade. You can just Google that and it'll probably pop up somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Perfect. Well, we're going to make sure to link to all those things in the show notes so that they can find you, connect with you, and follow your adventures as well. I said there were only two questions. I'm going to actually ask question part B. Where's the name Restless Crusade come from? I'm really curious. It's a really cool name.
I don't know. We just kind of were thinking of ideas. We didn't want to have a name that pinholds us into one thing, right? Like you hear people with a travel blog and it's like, well, if you're not traveling all the time and you're at home, what do you do? So we didn't want a name that would, you know, have us stick to one particular mold. And I kind of like the idea of the crusade with the Indiana Jones sort of thing. And I don't know,
we're just always restless for adventure. And honestly, you never know where we're going to end up or what we're going to be doing. We could be hiking, we could be traveling.
We just kind of evolve and see where it goes. Yeah.
Awesome, guys. Well, hey, any final thoughts here before we wrap up?
I think when it comes with kids, just believe that they'll do it and let them amaze you. It's just kind of one of those things. They might be little, but they can do anything really, as long as we just tell them, as long as we don't tell them that they can't do something, they'll always seem to surprise you.
Yep. If you want to travel and you want to hike, whatever, just take mm-hmm. them. And do it and see how it goes.
Awesome. Well, Shannon, Tyson, thank you so much for taking the time out of your very busy schedules and wrangling the kids as well. I know that you said that they're not often in front of a computer or TVs, but you use the TV to help block out this block of time, which I know they love themselves. So really appreciate you guys taking the time out and sharing your story and having the listeners have an opportunity to connect with you as well. And for the listeners out there, if you want to connect with Shannon Tyson, please feel free and make sure you do so. They've got some incredible stories and you can see a lot of the really cool places where they take their young girls and a lot of their tips and tricks around hiking, backpacking, and even just traveling light and traveling with young children. And if you enjoyed the podcast, if you enjoyed this episode, please don't forget not just to subscribe, but also to toss a 5-star rating in the reviews. Would love your feedback as well. That really helps us. It helps the algorithm, helps the show. But in general, we just want to be able to give back great things to you and share amazing stories like Shannon and Tyson's. So, Restless Crusade, thank you so much for being here today. And for the listeners out there, we'll catch you in the next episode. Take care.
Thanks for tuning in to the Revolutionizing Your Journey podcast, brought to you by Boldly Go. Hit that follow button so you don't miss out on new episodes. For deeper insights and to level up your travel game with our strategies, make sure to follow us on our social media platforms and sign up for our newsletter to stay in the loop. Head over to www.boldlygo.world to learn more. As DeAndre is not operating through this podcast as a fiduciary and/or financial advisor, this should not be considered personal financial advice. The information covered and posted has been made available for informational and educational purposes only. The strategies and results referenced on this site, while proven, are not guaranteed. While most who apply the principles referenced will achieve similar results, you may not yourself. Your results will vary and depend on many factors that may be in or out of your control, but include factors such as your credit score, financial status, business experience, etc. It is your responsibility to consume and implement these recommendations at your own risk. We cannot be held responsible for any failure to do so.
Luxury flights and hotels can be had for free. The world of points and miles sounds too good to be true, but it's actually real, but only if you know what you're doing.
On Frequent Miler on the Air, Greg and I'm Nick, discuss all the ways to earn points and miles and use them for outsized value.
Join us every Friday for our full episodes and every Tuesday for our quick, single-topic coffee break episodes.
See you there.